but not running. As he landed on the soles of his feet, his knees caved in from the force of the impact, and his butt smashed down on the gravel in the chute. He shook it off as best he could. There was no time to really pull himself together. He had to get out of the way or be crushed by the others jumping after him. As JB's shoulder rolled down the slope, he felt the whoosh and heard the grunt Mildred made as she crashed to the ground. Then he was up and running. He couldn't wait to make sure everyone else made it down, because that would have blocked the escape route. After three or four strides, his run became a slide, and his slide was on the verge of becoming another fall. He jammed the buttstock of the M4000 into the loose rock, using it as a rudder to control his wild descent. At the bottom of the chute, the grade flattened and JB came to a skidding stop. Mildred bumped into him a moment later, followed by Jack, Dean, Christy, and Doc. The experience had turned the old man a whiter shade of pale. It was a miracle that no one had broken an ankle. Barely breathing, they listened, straining to screen out the rumble of volcanic lakes and hissing steam vents. Overhead, now lost in the dark, the rhythmic beating of the aircraft came at them from the south.
Let's move!
Because he had no choice, he led them through an obstacle course of boiling hot springs, over ground he knew had to be undermined. They ran on a thin crust of earth that could give way under their combined weight, plunging them to a terrible death by scalding. JB muttered with every running stride.
Don't break! Don't break! Don't break!
They reached and rounded the muddy shore of an infernal lake, and as they raced on, they kicked through a scatter of shattered bones, pelvic girdles, ribs, vertebrae. There were paw prints as well. Lots of them, jumbled and pressed deep into the muck. The heat along the shore was so intense that the sweat dripping off JB's face, off his chest, and pouring down the middle of his back had no cooling effect. He felt as if his clothes were going to burst into flame. When he looked up, a black shadow passed across the stars, cutting off all hope of their retreat. JB slowed, then stopped. He stood slope-shouldered, his blasters hanging uselessly in his hands. The companions closed ranks around him, facing the oncoming aircraft. Rumbling cauldrons to the rear spat drops of boiling mud on their unprotected backs. But that was the least of their worries. Silhouetted against the blue-white moon, the aircraft slowly turned its weapons pod toward them. As the van skidded through the slime, Nara threw an arm around Ryan's neck and pulled him to the floor. Then, everything flashed green. Though Ryan shut his eyelid, the blaze inside his head was brighter than any sun. Brighter and closer. For a terrible, interminable instant, the doors of a nuclear blast furnace gaped wide, and Ryan stood naked upon its hearth. The heat, like a head-to-foot body blow, hammered Ryan into the floorboards. Then it was gone. He lay beside Nara, every muscle in his body quivering and jerking from the shock. He lifted his head and saw they were still sliding sideways, but they were no longer riding in an enclosed van. In the space of a heartbeat, the roof above them had vanished, along with the upper third of the side walls, rear doors, and windshield. The tops of all the seats were likewise cut through. Ryan pulled himself up to his knees, then onto the edge of the bench seat. Five heads popped up in front of him, three Mercy men and a woman, and Dan behind the steering wheel, fighting to regain control. On the seat directly in front of him, the guy stuck to the wall, no longer had a head to pop up. Like the roof and walls, it had been vaporized. Scorched black from shoulder to shoulder, he spat and crackled like a smoldering log. Ryan swiveled and looked behind him. The torsos and legs of two Mercy sat rigidly on what was left of the rear seat. More headless wonders. Their clothing and flesh were fused to the smoking pillow of black slag at the new, lowered top of the seat. He squinted as a battery of floodlights from the APCs in pursuit swept over the van's interior. Whoever they weren't interested in taking or recovering prisoners.
Get them off us!
Dem steered out of the skid.
Tri-barrels won't stop them. Just slow them down.
As Nara struggled to regain her balance and pick up her weapon, Ryan grabbed a pulse rifle from the floor. How well had he learned his lesson? It was final exam time. He thumbed off the safety and squashed the rear trigger. It locked back with a tangible click. Instantly, the weapon throbbed in his hands, and burst after green burst shot through the middle of the rear door. Trigger still pinned, Ryan reached over the receiver and twisted the other control switch all the way to the right. The laser weapon screamed. A solid line of green connected the tri-barrel's muzzle and the van door. With a single backhanded swipe, he chopped away what remained of the van's rear doors, clearing them to the floor. Then he fanned the gallery ceiling behind, slicing free 50 feet of slime drape. As it crashed to the ground, the headlights of the lead pursuer abruptly winked out. The other two APCs veered wildly to avoid piling into the buried vehicle. It slowed them only for a second or two, then they were back on course. And closing ground. Nara shouldered her weapon.
Do something, damn! Before their weapon systems lock us in!
Over the blinding glare of headlights, an even brighter light flared. When he saw the green flash, Ryan averted his eye and shielded his face. The van lurched forward and up, suddenly weightless, suddenly airborne. The laser cannon had hit low this time, taking out all the wheels. The van dropped hard onto its bare suspension, and its momentum sent it spinning across the beds of slime. There was nothing Ryan could do but hang on and hope. Between his boots, the floorboards looked like lace. Melted lace. Bacterial slime, scraped free of the ground by the van's undercarriage, was forced up through the holes, sieved into a mass of thrashing green worms. They slammed sideways into a building wall, the impact cushioned by a pad of bacterial growth 20 feet deep. As Ryan bounced off the inside of the van, the slime curtain above broke loose from the ceiling and slopped down onto the roofless van. He was buried under a terrible wet weight. Choked by the stench of ammonia, he struggled to get free. As Ryan pushed out from under the slunk, Dam was pulling Nara to her feet. He had a satchel slung over one shoulder.
This way!
The Mercy leader vaulted the van's ruined sidewall. On Nara's heels, Ryan hopped down into the green slop. Already he thought he could feel something strange going on inside his lungs, a kind of chill deep down, and a heaviness that made it hard for him to draw breath. He hoped it was just the power of suggestion. But he felt a noticeable strain in his chest, and an accompanying weakness in his legs as he fought through the piles of slime to catch up with the blonde. In the glare of the oncoming APC's headlights, the bleak, softly shrouded landscape before him stretched on and on, as far as he could see. If those lights went out, he knew he would be instantly, irretrievably lost, and shortly thereafter, very dead. Unseen, gauzy curtains of slime slicked over Ryan's face, his nose, his lips. An acrid, evil taste filled his mouth. He spat as he ran, and as he spat, he fought to keep from puking. Sticky moisture from the humid air, from the mounds of slunk he stomped through, had seeped through his clothes and onto his skin. At least he wasn't the last in line. Perhaps because their infections were more advanced, the other Mercies were struggling to keep up. Leading the ragged file of seven, Dam headed for the only source of light other than the fast-closing APCs, a dim, greenish rectangle at ground level. Floodlights from behind swept over them, and almost in the same instant, they were hit by another cannon pulse. Ryan felt the wave of heat above his head and to the rear. He heard a sizzling sound, then a scream cut off short. When he glanced back, he saw the man behind him was gone, turned to vapor along with tons of bacteria. Another cannon pulse slammed the wall ahead of him. Though momentarily blinded, he kept on running. There was no stopping now. As he sprinted through the billowing steam cloud, the stench of frying slime enveloped him. Ahead of him, Dam vanished into the rectangle of paler green, then Nara. He hit the foot of the ramp and skidded on the thin layer of water that was sheeting off the concrete. Above was more light. Above was hope. Gasping for air, Ryan charged up the incline. There was no mere chill in his lungs now. There was burning cold and a tangible sloshing weight with every step. He was drowning. He wanted to cough, but he couldn't let himself. Once he started, he knew he'd never stop. Behind them, he could hear the roar of the APC's engines. No way could he outrun the pursuit. Certainly not uphill, on foot, with lungs half full of bacteria. 40 feet up the ramp from Ryan, Dam slowed long enough to unsling the satchel from his shoulder, pull a lanyard inside, and drop the bag on the ground. As Ryan dodged around the obstacle, he could hear the hissing of the fuse inside. Dam cried back at him.
Run! Run!
Run was all he could do. There were no turns to hide behind, just an up-tilting expanse of straight and narrow. Though it felt as if he were dying, Ryan drove himself onward. The resounding clank of metal tracks on concrete filled the tunnel, as did the light from a bank of headlights. The APC driver gunned his engine and shifted into low gear. Ryan had gone no more than 20 steps farther when he was slammed by a giant hand, flattened on